gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, P.J. Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Rich.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
The Rockets stroll into TD Garden and whoop the, but they beat the Celtics by a score of 1,111-110. Okay, you guys know that wasn't actually the score, but since y'all gave me plenty of grief about it on Twitter, the score was 1,111-110. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter, at JT Gatlin. You can also find our show on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a huge favor. Subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Drop us a review. Leave us some stars. Share the podcast on all your social media. Tell your friends about the podcast. Tell, you know, when you're down at the barbershop, tell them about the podcast. When you're driving down the street, shout out the podcast out your car window. Hey, listen to Locked On Rockets. Do that for me. I would sincerely appreciate it. Rockets beat the Celtics in Boston by a score of 111-110. This game, roller coaster? Is that too much of a cliche to call it a roller coaster? Because my heart was literally beating out of my chest for probably the final 10-ish minutes of actual game time, the final 5 minutes of regulation into the 5 minutes of overtime, which we'll get to why the overtime was even necessary in the first place. But first thing I want to hit on really quickly is, before I dive into the Celtics recap, is obviously we've had a little bit of news, and I haven't recorded a pod yet since Giannis decided to de-escalate the beef between he and James Harden, right? So Giannis makes his comments around the All-Star break, you know, calls out James and his lack of passing, you know, agrees with Charles with him being the dribbler, talks about targeting James Harden because of his poor defense during the All-Star game, and throws him a cheap shot in the actual game itself, right? So we had all this over the All-Star break. Then James Harden sits down with Rachel Nichols and basically says that Giannis is unskilled and that he wishes that he could, you know, just be 7 feet tall and run around and dunk like Giannis does. Now, on the surface, first off, let's clear one thing up. I don't think Giannis actually thinks that James Harden doesn't pass, and I don't think that James Harden actually thinks that Giannis is unskilled. I think both of these guys are two of the most talented players in the league, and I think this was more just, you know, a reactionary comment from James Harden taking a jab at Giannis after he took a jab at James. So I think that's fair play. Now, past that, Giannis comes back out with his, you know, reaction video, because it's the NBA trying to, or not the NBA, it's ESPN trying to manufacture this fake beef between these two stars. Giannis comes back out and says, you know what, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not, you know, I'm a family man. I just want to, you know, do my job and go back home to my family. Like, he's some 9-to-5 office worker. What? So what? He doesn't even own up to it, which infuriates me, because if you're going to actually come out and make the comments in the first place and start this stuff, then at least own up to it. Be like, yeah, I said James Harden doesn't pass. What of it? And then go from there. Don't just back down because suddenly James Harden is in your grill about it. And now everybody's freaking out because Giannis has come out and had a couple of good games since James Harden's comments, and, you know, rightfully so. That's what he was supposed to do. You know, James Harden calls him out and says he's unskilled, and Giannis comes out and shuts everybody up by dropping, you know, a 30-point game and then a 40-point game, I think, something like that. A couple really good games from him. So all that being said, I think this was just an attempt to manufacture some resentment, you know, across enemy lines between the Bucks and the Rockets, and I don't think either player handled themselves poorly. I mean, again, I would have wished that Giannis would have just owned up to what he said, but I don't think either one of if Giannis had called out another player, I would have expected said player, whether it's, you know, LeBron or AD or whoever it is, Joel Embiid, I would have expected them to come back firing with comments as well. But because it's James Harden, everybody's painting James Harden as the true villain and Giannis as this, you know, poster child of the NBA, the golden boy of the NBA, can do no wrong, family man, whatever. I'm sick of it. You know, I'm sick of it. I don't care. And the only way to get the NBA or to get not the NBA, to get the media off of James Harden's back is for him to win. And that's what he's got to do, is he's got to come out and win, which is why it's great that after those comments, the Rockets were able to come out and actually secure this W against the Celtics. Now, optics wise, it's not great that James Harden had a poor game, 21 points, just 7 of 24 shooting, 4 of 17 from behind the arc. Not a great game from James Harden. Not his best day at the office before going home and being a family man. No. Anyways. So, not great that James had a stinker of a game, but it does help that Russ had a dominant game. So, Russ completely took over this game. 41 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Did have 6 turnovers. He and James both at times were being sloppy with the basketball. In fact, you know, one of James's probably the most crucial turnover of the game happened near the end of regulation, which is really what gave the Celtics life and pushed it to overtime. So we'll get to that sequence a little bit later on. So the turnovers were costly, but they shifted the way that they played from that first half. It felt like they were playing an uphill battle for the first 24 minutes of this game, and especially that first quarter. They had, I think by the end of the first quarter, they had 7 turnovers, and it wasn't necessarily because the Celtics were just doing a great job of reading the passing lanes and being where they needed to be to intercept the ball. It was the Rockets were just, both Harden and Westbrook, the degree of difficulty on some of their passes were just needlessly insane. Like, I'm talking about trying to thread passes through like 2 or 3 Boston defenders, you know, in transition. Just, they were overthinking these plays. I think there was one, you know, a little bit later in the game too. Either it might have been second quarter, might have been third quarter, where Russ had a fast break and there were 2 Celtics and it was Russ and somebody else was running the floor with him. And Russ tried to thread the needle between the 2 Celtics when he could have just easily taken the ball to the rim himself. So sometimes I think they just, you know, they get in their own head a little bit. And it's one of those, you know, you were beating yourself kind of moments where I think they were able to look back on the first half and how poorly they did play and then realize that, you know, they could come out and, you know, you had an 11-point deficit at halftime, right? So 11-point deficit at halftime, they came out and blew the Celtics out of the water in the third quarter, 36-22. So they dialed it up defensively, and that was the only really good offensive quarter that they had. So we'll dive into the specifics coming up here in just 1 second about that quarter and kind of what really separated that quarter from everything else. And then we'll also get into, obviously, the tail end of the game and how that kind of unraveled leading to overtime in just 1 second. So don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the Rockets 111-110 win in TD Garden against the Boston Celtics, dropping the Celtics to 41-18 on the season, now 23-6 at home. They boast a really good home record. It's hard to go in there and get a W. Rockets improved to 39-20 on the season, now 18-12 on the road. So as I mentioned at the end of the last segment, you know, I want to get into this third quarter. The third quarter, 36-22 in favor of the Rockets. And this third quarter was interesting because basically the Rockets clawed their way back into this. They just came out with better energy, better game plan, better on both sides of the basketball. Look, they shot an abysmal 15 of 55 from behind the arc in this game, right? 27%. They hit 15 threes. They hit 7 of those in the third quarter, okay? Basically, the first quarter, second quarter, and fourth quarter offensively were all relatively kind of duds. Like, Russell Westbrook was the only consistent offense this team was getting, but that third quarter, everybody showed up to play. I mean, Westbrook still dropped in 9 of his 41 in this quarter. PJ Tucker hit 2 big threes in the quarter. Robert Covington hit 2 big threes. And there was the kind of mounted run where through the first 6 minutes of the quarter, the Rockets had only allowed 8 points. So they'd only given up 8 Celtics points through the first 6 or so minutes of that quarter. And it was right around that 6-minute mark that the James Harden, Daniel House alley-oop in transition took place, which was incredible, I will say, one of the best alley-oop dunks of the season. And the fact that Daniel House hung on the rim afterwards and even got a delay of game violation for it, totally worth it. Was 100% behind that. And then James Harden hits one of his rare, in this game, three-pointers. He only hit four of them in this one, 4 of 17. Hits one of his 4 three-pointers right after that to give the Rockets their first lead of the evening, I believe, 66-64. And they just didn't look back. They, you know, they powered through the rest of that quarter, and they maintained a three-point edge headed into the final frame, 81-78. So that quarter, that was the comeback quarter. That was the quarter that got you back into the game. You know, they really tried to fight their way back in before halftime and just couldn't quite get it to single digits. You know, they had some impressive stops there down the line in the second quarter. They just couldn't get the ball in the basket. So this third quarter, you know, they found the range. 7 of 15 shooting from behind the arc is incredible. That's great three-point shooting from that quarter. The offensive contributions were there. But then you had the fourth quarter, where everything in the fourth quarter was just, I mean, it was back and forth for a chunk of that fourth quarter. I mean, you look at this game as a whole, and it had 10 lead changes. It was tied 8 different times. But that final series in the fourth quarter, under a minute of game time left. The back and forth that occurred within the final, you know, 30, 45 seconds of the game is what pushed it to OT. So the Rockets had a, you know, not comfortable, but a 5-point lead, right? So 101-96, Rockets are leading. James Harden brings the ball up the court, and, you know, he was in danger maybe of getting an 8-second violation. So he tries this kind of, you know, sloppy pass, and it gets stolen, and Marcus Smart hits a layup in transition. So suddenly you're down to a 3-point lead. Rockets inbound the ball. Celtics have a foul to give. They take it. Rockets inbound the ball again, and they have to foul because it's less than 24 seconds on the game clock. Westbrook goes to the line, misses the first one, hits the second one. Rockets have a 4-point cushion, 102-98. Marcus Smart makes an improbable 3-pointer, bumping the score to 102-101. Rockets inbound the ball. Russell Westbrook gets it again. Russell Westbrook goes 2 for 2 this time. So the score is now 104-101. It's a one-possession game. And Rockets foul. Jason Tatum is at the free throw line. Misses the first one accidentally. Then purposely misses the second free throw. The Rockets fumble the rebound. It gets batted out to Jaylen Brown. And Jaylen Brown sticks the three-pointer at the end of regulation. That series was frustrating for a whole bunch of different reasons. They didn't need to be in that position. First off, James Harden didn't need to commit that turnover, didn't need to force that pass when he did. Second, once it got to the point where the game was going to be decided or could have been decided on what would have been an offensive rebound, why, for the love of God, would you not put in the 7'1", 7'2" Tyson Chandler sitting over there on the bench? I do not understand the logic behind that. Or even at a lesser extent, because James Harden, regrettably, was the guy who bobbled the rebound, and then it got batted back out to Jaylen Brown to sink the three-pointer. Why not put Russell Westbrook on the three-point, or on the block, whatever? Put Russell Westbrook in as one of the three guys to box out the shooter. That's what I'm trying to say, right? Why put James Harden there? I know James Harden's a good rebounder in his own right, but he's not nearly as athletic as Russell Westbrook. So, I mean, why not stick Russell Westbrook right there in that spot to box out the shooter, a guy who can jump through the gym, through the roof of the gym, put him on the line, let him box out the shooter. I feel like he would have secured the rebound. Anyways, right, so that's the sequence. That was the sequence of the game right there, essentially, because that's what pushed it to OT. You know, that sequence shouldn't have happened. The Rockets did fight back. They did have that lead, you know, go down the stretch, but they weren't able to close it out, unfortunately. And that sucks to be pushed into overtime. And I'm happy still that they came away with the win, but I'm concerned about the decision making in those final moments. You know, the lack of decision making on Mike D'Antoni's part. I don't know why you would settle for Jeff Green and PJ Tucker and James Harden to try and get that rebound, a rebound that could have very well cost you the game because they were coming in off of a timeout. So it doesn't make sense as to why that wouldn't have happened. Anyways, I don't want to rant and rave about it too much because, let's face it, they got the win And that's the important part. They got the win, and that's what counts. So I'm not going to be too upset about it. But coming up here in just a second, we'll talk about the decision to play Ben McLemore over Damari Carroll. We'll talk about the hypocrisy of undercutting on three-point shooters and the flagrant foul on Russell Westbrook, and also the phenomenal games from Robert Covington and PJ Tucker, and a bit more in that final segment. So we'll be there in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Wrapping up the thoughts on the win against the Boston Celtics, the second win against the Celtics this season. So Bill Simmons can be all upset about the Rockets and, you know, the fact that he has now gone 0-2 against the small ball, which he hates so much, apparently, and just whatnot. The terrible basketball, whatever. I try not to occupy myself with worrying about Bill Simmons too much. And I will, before I get into the points that I wanted to make that I mentioned at the end of the second segment, I will mention that even though James Harden did struggle in this game, right, give him credit where credit's due. He hit the two game-winning free throws for the Rockets. You know, he just, look, he had an entire defense geared towards stopping him. And even Jaylen Brown said it post-game where they focused all their attention on James Harden, and Jaylen Brown said, and I quote, "We forgot about the other MVP over there." And that's what makes this team so special and so unique, is you have James Harden, who you have to stop. You also have Russell Westbrook, who you somehow have to manage to stop. And being able to stop both of those guys is a tall task for any team in the league. So on a night where James Harden received the majority of focus from the defense, Russell Westbrook was able to carry the weight of the team and take them to the W. And that's exactly what this duo is supposed to do. So there are going to be nights where maybe teams try to bottle up Russell Westbrook a bit more, and those will be the games where Harden goes off for 40 or 50, like we're used to, like we were used to seeing earlier this season. But anyways, again, James Harden, not the best game, but we do have to give, you know, a little bit of attention to the fact that the entire defense is geared to stop him, to the point where, you know, they're cutting off driving lanes, they're shading off their off the three-point line to prevent driving lanes for James. He got blocked at the rim like 2-3 times, had to settle for a lot of outside shots, a lot of step backs, and just didn't quite have the shooting stroke in this one. So that's why his numbers aren't that great. Also, I do have to acknowledge really quickly, the trio of Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and Jaylen Brown had phenomenal games. I mean, Jason Tatum, 32 points, 13 boards, 5 assists. The dude is a bona fide superstar. Like, he is going to be a terror in the league for years to come. Marcus Smart, 26 points, 5 of 15 from behind the arc. I mean, dude put on a show. And then Jaylen Brown, 22 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, had a steal, had a block, had the, you know, game-tying three-pointer to send it to overtime. So have to acknowledge those guys a little bit and what they were able to put up. And just, you know, they fell a little bit short. And, you know, in a game where they didn't have Kemba Walker, you imagine what this game would look like without, or sorry, I can't say without, you imagine what this game would look like with Kemba Walker. And in a way, maybe the Rockets would match up with them a little bit better if Kemba Walker had been playing, because then you don't have Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. And, you know, I don't know, you can play the whole butterfly effect all you want, but just wanted to give those guys, you know, some recognition, because they, all three of them, had phenomenal games. But to the guys that I do want to cover, the guys, the, you know, sometimes unspoken heroes, but Robert Covington, PJ Tucker, those guys, look, you don't win this game without those guys. I mean, Robert Covington had 16 points, 16 boards, a steal, 3 blocks. This is the 6th game in a row that he's recorded 3 or more blocks, which is the longest streak since Hakeem Olajuwon did it back in his prime. And Hakeem did it in, it was like 7 games in a row that Hakeem did it. So there's a chance for Robert Covington to break a record held by the great Hakeem Olajuwon if he keeps this up. His block party continues. And then PJ Tucker, 13 rebounds. 6 of them were offensive boards. PJ Tucker, I tweeted it out at one point during the game. PJ Tucker makes winning basketball plays. PJ is the guy who's going to be in the right spot at the right time to grab a rebound, to give you that extra possession, to give you that little bit of push towards trying to secure the W. And he did that multiple times late in this one. You don't win this game without PJ Tucker. You don't win this game without Robert Covington. Those guys are your two defensive anchors. They are the clamps, as I tweeted out. I love that photo, by the way. I can't take credit for it. Somebody else made it, but they are the clamps. And when you put PJ Tucker and Robert Covington out there against an opposing team, they're going to get the clamps. Pass those two, MDA's decision to run Ben McLemore over Damari Carroll. So Damari Carroll gets no minutes in this one. Ben McLemore gets 12 minutes. But Ben didn't, he only took 1-3, didn't even hit that one that he did take. And I don't know why you wouldn't run Damari Carroll in that situation. You know, I think Ben's strength is in his shooting. So if McLemore's not out there shooting the ball, then there's not really a reason to have him out there over Damari Carroll. So I hope that this isn't something, you know, more tied to, you know, the frustrated Instagram post. I don't think it is, but it's still peculiar to me that MDA would go with Ben McLemore, unless his goal was to, you know, maybe at some point to get Ben McLemore rolling because of the Rockets' lackluster three-point shooting in this one. Maybe he was hoping, you know, Ben could get an open look or two and drain a couple threes to give, you know, a bit of a spark off the bench in this one, but that just never really materialized. And so again, he only played 12 minutes. That was the lowest number of minutes for a bench player in this one. Jeff Green played 14, Austin Rivers 22, and Eric Gordon 21 minutes. So Rivers with the high minute man, or Rivers was the high minute man off the bench with 22 minutes. But again, it, you know, Ben McLemore, there weren't any plays that stood out to me that were really egregious on the defensive end. So he didn't really cost you at any point in this game. So I'm not happy about it, but I'm not unhappy. I'm indifferent towards McLemore's minutes in this one. Speaking of minutes, though, the Celtics really wanted this one, and so did the Rockets. I mean, you go down the Jason Tatum played 45 minutes, Hayward 41, Tice 39, Marcus Smart 45, Jalen Brown 44. Pretty much the same thing for the Rockets lineup. Tucker had 39, Covington had 39, House Jr. had 34, Westbrook with 43, so he was the high minute man for the Rockets. And then James Harden with 41 minutes. So both teams really wanted this one. I mean, this would have been a high-minute game even without the overtime when you look at it. So, and then I do want to circle back around. I didn't mention it at the end of the last segment, but Daniel House Jr., I will say he shut me up pretty quick. But then MDA justified what I was saying. So at one point, you know, I said something during the game where, look, they needed to pull Daniel House out. He was, when I tweeted what I said, you know, he was 0 of 6, hadn't hit a single three-pointer. He had the fantastic alley-oop dunk from James Harden, which was incredible, but that was about all he'd done, and he'd pulled in some rebounds up to that point. And so I tweeted something out like Eric Gordon or Austin Rivers needs to be in the closing five-man lineup, not Daniel House Jr. He just doesn't have it this game. And then Daniel House shut me up really quick because he had a putback dunk, a baseline cut dunk, and then a three-pointer all in the span of about like 2 minutes or something, scored 7 points just back to back to back really fast. And granted, those were the final points that he scored because MDA did opt to run Eric Gordon instead of Daniel House Jr. during overtime. So I feel a little bit vindicated based on that decision by MDA, but I will give Daniel House credit where credit's due. I was talking smack on Twitter about Daniel House Jr. saying he didn't need to be a closer because he was struggling, and he proceeded to shut me up. So I appreciate that. I like it when I'm wrong about things like that. Maybe I was being a bit overreactionary as far as, you know, thinking that he needed to be sat, but 0 of 6 at that point, and it wasn't just the 0 of 6 shooting that was bothering me. It was that it got to a point where he was passing up looks that he was supposed to be taking because he was becoming hesitant in his shot. There were at least one or two three-point shots that he clearly could have shot, passed up the open look, and then opted to reset and give the ball to James or Russ or just pass to another, you know, person who was covered. And that's not great. That's not Rockets offense. It doesn't matter how poorly you're shooting. Doesn't matter if you're 0 for 6 or, I'm going to say it, 0 for 27, you keep shooting those three-pointers until they fall. That's the ideology that this team is built around, and you got to either buy in completely or change it completely. There is no, when you get stuck in that middle ground, that's when you have issues. If you're starting to be hesitant on the three-point shooting, that's when you're having issues. So I appreciate that he did prove me wrong and scored those 7 points because those 7 points were crucial in the Rockets' win. I think next thing I want to tackle is Russell Westbrook and the flagrant one that he was charged with based on the three-point closeout on Marcus Smart. Look, first off, what the hell, right, guys? Like, if that's a flagrant foul, then Klay Thompson should be put in jail for attempted murder based on game one of the playoffs last season. Because there were about four or five flagrant fouls in that game that weren't called. And all I want is consistency in the refereeing. I just want calls to be the same for, I won't even say on a game-by-game basis. Or I guess I am saying on a game-by-game, because I can understand how game-by-game calls were very different, refereeing crews, whatever. I just want calls to be the same in each game. That's what I'll settle for. Obviously, I want the textbook definition of the fouls to remain the same. So if you do undercut a three-point shooter, yeah, it should be a foul. Is it a flagrant? No, it's not a flagrant foul. Is it a foul and should they get three free throws? Absolutely. We want that call for James Harden every single time. Marcus Smart deserved that call as well. He deserved three free throws. Did he deserve a flagrant? Absolutely not. But he got one. And so I just want the consistency to be there. And I want it to be the same from minute one in a game all the way through minute 48 or any included overtime. And that feels like it doesn't happen enough. Feels like a refereeing crew will, or an officiating crew, I should say, will, you know, ref the game one way for the first 24 minutes, and then the refs do go back and they look at tape and stuff during halftime and they discuss amongst themselves, you know, what calls they missed and, you know, what they need to be paying attention for and all this stuff. But then they come back out and then it's like they either have a tighter whistle or they're letting the guys play, so to speak. That's not good. I don't like having these players have to suddenly change their mentality halfway through a game. Refereeing should be consistent at all times. It can't be because of human error and all that kind of stuff, but it's frustrating that it varies so much game by game or even inside of a game where the first half can be wildly different from the second half or the fourth quarter is wildly different from the first three quarters of play. It's just, obviously we've heard our fair share of refereeing complaints from Ben Dubose over the years, and so I'm no different. I probably don't talk about it quite as much as Ben does, but it does still bother me. And that call specifically bothered the hell out of me, especially because later on in the game, there were points where James Harden was getting undercut on the threes that should have been called. And, you know, lo and behold, referees swallowing their whistles. Anyways, I won't go on too much of a frothing tangent about that one, but that did bother me a little bit. Also, I'm going to give a shout out real quick to Jeff Green, who I did, you know, had to have a little fun on Twitter saying that we'd been had with Jeff Green. You know, 10-day Jeff Green is one animal, and then signed for the rest of the season, Jeff Green is a completely different beast, apparently. But no, Jeff Green had two blocks. He pulled in, you know, he had a rebound. He hit 1-3. Not Jeff Green's best game as a Houston Rocket, but also not his worst. I don't know. I gave him some grief on Twitter jokingly. And it wasn't quite deserved, not yet. Now, if he has a couple more games where he plays, you know, below average, then the slander will be back on the menu. But as it stands right now, you know, I'm happy with the win in this one. I'm happy that they were able to win with defense. And I mentioned it in the first segment, and I'm going to circle back and kind of wrap up with this, is they won with defense. And that's something that's so special for this team, this group of guys now, is that they can rely on their defense to win them games. Will it win them every single game? Absolutely not. They do still need to rely on their potent offense. But their defense is good enough that during the gaps or stretches where another team is, you know, holding them to below their usual point average, or the opposing team's defensive scheme is clogging the paint or preventing them from getting the shots they want, whatever it may be, it's good to know that the Rockets can actually trust in their defense now to potentially pull out a win every so often. And I know it's a small sample size, but really quickly, in the six games, the six-game win streak that they're on, the Rockets have the best offensive rating over that span in the NBA, an offensive rating of 119 points per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating is fifth in the league at 104.8 points per 100 possessions, for a league-wide best net rating, edging out the Milwaukee Bucks in that category for a 14.2 net rating over that six-game stretch. That's incredible. So that dates all the way back to the first matchup against the Boston Celtics before the All-Star break. And now it covers all six games leading up to the most recent win against the Boston Celtics. So that's not, obviously it's a smaller sample size, but that's not inconsequential. That is small ball basketball at work. This is showing that the Rockets have a potent offense and that their defense is now finally clicking, that they finally have a group of guys that they can rely on. The chemistry is there. The pieces are there. PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, Daniel House, you know, the forwards are making it happen. The guard defense has been better. Having Austin Rivers playing as well as he's been playing offensively means that he's not as much of an offensive issue or as, you know, detrimental on the offensive end, I should say. And that means you can rely on him for his defensive contributions on that side of the basketball. This squad is doing good things. They're keeping the streak alive. And moving forward, they have an easy game against the Knicks Monday night. And then after that, they've got what will be the next biggest game of the season. I know we've had a bunch of those. The Utah Jazz game was the biggest game of the season. They just had what is probably now another huge game, this W against the Celtics in Boston. And lastly, or you know, coming up right around the corner is going to be the game against the Clippers. That game isn't necessarily for all the marbles, but that game will basically decide whether you're going to be stuck in the 4-5 bracket or if you're going to bump yourself up into the 2-3 bracket. Because that's where you want to be able to avoid the Lakers until the Western Conference Finals. So if they want to have a better home court, you know, higher up in the seeding, better home court, probably face an easier team in the first round, then they need to get this win against the Clippers coming up Thursday evening. That's going to be a huge game. And the way that they're playing, and honestly with kind of the Clippers' struggles as of late, at least specifically in the Paul George department, I think they're going to come out and wax the floor with the Clippers, honestly. I think they're going to come out and have a pretty big statement game. And it feels like they've had a lot of those as of late, and I feel like that trend is going to continue. So I think I touched on everything from this one. Oh, wait, the ridiculous Photoshop of James Harden from when he fell at halftime is just one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen. So just to clear anything up for anybody that was, you know, that has seen this already, is it was fake. It's an edit. So James Harden fell and kind of was leaning back on the floor and somebody Photoshopped, you know, a stain of sorts onto his basketball shorts. And obviously it's not real. There was nothing going on there, but now everybody's running with it and the jokes are being made. And it's, you know, ridiculous that James Harden has to deal with this kind of crap in the media. And it's silly that nobody, you know, fact-checked it or proved it before, you know, some idiot with Photoshop decided to make it happen and, you know, have a ha-ha funny moment about James Harden. And I kind of argued that if this was any other superstar player, that the masses wouldn't be piling on because, let's face it, everybody likes to hate on James Harden. Hating on James Harden is the cool thing for most fans to do. He is by far the least liked superstar in the league. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating, you know, rooting for this team and following this team, covering this team, and, you know, seeing just how polarizing this superstar is, where, you know, if he's your guy, if the Rockets are your team, you love him, and then everybody else just seems to hate him for some reason. It sucks. And it's kind of nice having, I guess, like a lot of the Thunder fans who migrated over because of Russell Westbrook. It's kind of nice having this backup entourage of people to help kind of defend James Harden a little bit, because now Rockets fans and Thunder fans have united to defend Russell Westbrook and James Harden and all the slander that those two guys receive on a nightly basis. I mean, they're basically the slander twins. Like, everybody loves to crap on James Harden and everybody loves to crap on Russell Westbrook. So it's cool that those two fan bases, Rockets and Thunder, have been able to partner up to try and defend, you know, Brody and the Beard throughout their conquest and their goal to win an NBA championship this season. So I think that's where I'll kind of wrap things up for. As always, I appreciate you guys listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.